This week, we're going to be talking about the president.
Well, a president.
It's Schmanners. Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host, Teresa McElroy.
And you're listening to Schmanners.
It's Extraordinary Etiquette.
For Ordinary Occasion. Hello, BB. Also, BB's here.
Also, BB's here.
Hello, my dove. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you, dear?
You know, doing all right. It's the end of another long week of podcasting. And, you know, also just life.
You know, life.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I really enjoyed prepping for this one. It was quite nice, quite pleasant.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Was researching compliments unpleasant?
No.
Okay.
But you know, sometimes you just get a little bit of news burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And what you really want to do is delve into a good book.
And where did we get this good book from?
It was sent to us by a fan.
What?
Unfortunately, I was unable to discern who sent it to us.
A mystery. It's a mystery. Delicious mystery.
But you know what? If you send me a book about somebody, I'm probably going to do it on the show.
Well, we're going to be flooded with books. That's fine. Books are great.
So here it is. I was sent George Washington's Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and in Conversation.
Wait, George Washington, like the president?
Yes.
And this is a book about etiquette?
Yes.
The president?
Yes.
Wrote a book about manners?
Yes. Well, he didn't write it. He copied it down.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk all about this. But another really interesting thing is it has an introduction and some notes written by Letitia Baldridge, who is quoted on the front of the book as America's etiquette expert. Now, can I tell you, Travis, I had not heard of Letitia Baldridge.
But have you now?
I have.
Up until that moment, did you think you were America's etiquette expert? Was this heartbreaking for you?
I haven't been published, so probably not. I did not think it was I. But I thought perhaps it might be, you know, Judith Martin or Emily Post.
Yeah.
But not.
Okay.
Or, you know, she seems to be one of America's etiquette experts. Mm-hmm. Letitia Tish Baldridge was an American etiquette expert who was also a PR executive. And she was an author. She wrote a ton of books. She is most famous for serving as Jackie Kennedy's social secretary.
Oh, all right.
Amazing. So her little moniker, instead of Miss Manners, is Doyenne of Decorum.
Excuse me?
Doyenne of Decorum.
Spell Doyenne for me.
Doyenne. You always make me do this.
It's just a word I've never heard before. I like learning new words, Teresa.
So she published about 20 books, one of those being updating Amy Vanderbilt's Complete Book of Etiquette, which we have discussed before. Mm-hmm. She was on Late Night with David Letterman and featured on the cover of Time magazine.
Get out.
No, I will not.
Fair enough. I mean, you live here. You can stay.
So, as you can imagine, I delved wholeheartedly into this book. And I was very pleased with a lot of the really great things that George Washington lived by.
You know, I played dumb a little bit before. I've actually heard of this before because Nick Offerman talks about George Washington in his book Gumption.
Mm.
Has a whole big section on it, and he talks about some of George Washington's, like, rules to live by or the things that he copied down. Okay, wait, explain that to me.
Well, so it was a school exercise that he did sometime before the age of 16 because he really didn't go to school much after that.
Most people didn't, right?
Right. Well, I mean, actually, some people did. If you were poor, you didn't.
But it's not like today where it's like, you got to go to college.
Right. I mean, if you had the money, you could go to college. You know, like Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. They had money at that point, so they went to college.
Got it.
So it's a document that was often copied by school children, and it's from a book of etiquette called Youth's Behavior, or Decency in Conversation Amongst Men, which is by Francis Hawkins, who is who translated these rules from a set of behavior rules by French Jesuits.
Gotcha.
So it's a copy of a copy of a copy.
But I mean, that's not that sounds weird when you lay it out like that. But like the idea of like somebody copying down a translation of a thing and then being credited with it, it's not. Especially when you look back in time, or it's like, well, it got famous because this person copied it. It's not uncommon to have it credited to the person who copied it rather than the person who wrote it. Like, say, the King James Bible.
That's true. So just because he only copied them down doesn't mean that he didn't believe in them. And I hope that all of my little excerpts that I'm going to read you will prove to you that he did absolutely believe and follow these rules throughout his lifetime. So, let's start at the beginning of George Washington's life.
A very good place to start.
He was born in Virginia.
He was 7 feet tall, straight out the womb.
No.
A mountain of a man he was.
I mean, I didn't find out exactly how tall he was. Was he really tall?
7 feet. I don't know.
I don't think he was quite that tall.
Well, he falls under this category for me of like mythical real people. So if you told me that he was like 7'3", I'd be like, yes, that is correct.
I'm not quite sure how tall he was.
He weighed a ton.
No.
If the song is correct.
I'm certain that he didn't weigh a ton.
The size of a truck he was. He was a robot in human form.
Anyway. Born in Virginia on February 22nd, 1732. And his family moved around a little bit. They moved up to Little Hunting Creek Plantation, which would later be called Mount Vernon.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yes. But they moved away from there a few years later, to Ferry Farm, which is near Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Where they grow fairies?
No. But that is where he spent most of his youth, so they kind of settled there for a while. How about you tell me a little bit about George Washington's youth?
He chopped down a cherry tree, and then he didn't lie about it, because he's a good boy.
Right. That story, and amongst others, were populated by one of his first biographers, Mason Locke Weems. But he probably didn't do those things. I mean, there's really no way to know.
So you're telling me he did chop down a cherry tree, but he totes lied about it.
No.
George, you chopped this down. What? No, no, no. It was Thomas Jefferson, my friend.
It was probably made up to really demonstrate a lot of the amiable qualities that George Washington had. You know, honesty, piety, and physical strength, which you mentioned earlier.
He was a mountain of a man. A living flesh mountain.
You're going to have to maybe link that song.
Oh, yeah, the Washington. Well, it's not safe for work, but I will still.
Maybe we'll post it and label it adequately. Another one of those such fables is that George Washington threw a silver dollar across the Potomac. Probably not. He probably didn't do that.
Like, I believe that if a human being is physically capable of chopping down a cherry tree and not lying about it, yes, that one I can believe. He flung a piece of metal, 100 yards? How wide is the Potomac?
Okay, well, I mean, yes, the Potomac is quite wide.
Unless he skipped it.
But he may have, according to his step-grandson, he may have thrown a silver plate across the Rappahannock River in Fredericksburg, which is much narrower, and that might be where the story came from.
Okay.
I expected you to be a little more indignant about this.
Well, but that's the thing. It's like he threw a coin over a river. No, he didn't. And also, what would that go to? I guess that goes to show his ability to throw coins. But unless we're playing Assassin's Creed, I don't know how that helps you. In it, for those of you who don't know, in Assassin's Creed, you throw coins as a distraction because all the people around you then flock to try to... It's not important. It doesn't matter. It's just a weird video game reference that I'm not sure if it landed or not. Okay, back to the show.
So when George was 11 years old, his father died. So then George had to care for his mother and his four younger siblings. And he actually continued to help support his mother until the day she died. Which I think is amiable as well.
And she died in March 1972, if I remember correctly.
No. She actually died shortly after his first inauguration in 1789.
Oh.
Okay. That's really nice, though. She died knowing that her son had become president of the United States.
Pretty great.
Pretty great. So on to his education, which we talked about a little bit earlier. He probably had private tutors or went to local private schools. So at this time, in general, people would go to school from about 11 to 16 and learn basic stuff like reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Yes, the three R's in it. Yes, it was very cute.
You guys, I wish you could have seen that little dry take he gave me when I made a silly joke. Well, because you got excited
that you didn't mean to say reading, writing, arithmetic, but then you did, and you were very pleased with yourself. It was adorable.
Another thing that they probably would have learned at school would be bookkeeping and surveying, which would come in quite handy for our young George Washington.
You mean surveying, like land surveying, not like getting a bunch of people's opinions at the same time, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. So after his school days were done, George wanted to join the British Navy, but his mother wouldn't let him. So, like I said, he decided to become a surveyor.
Why didn't she? Was she afraid of sea monsters?
You know, I'm not exactly certain.
I bet that was it. I bet it was sea monsters.
Sea monsters?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I get it. I've seen Pirates of the Caribbean 9 times in theaters. I know about sea monsters.
Instead, he accompanied family friend George William Fairfax and became a surveyor to explore the unsurveyed wilderness of the Virginia frontier.
Yeah, this was a much different time because I think when I think of land surveyors now, I picture those people who like stand in the medians of highways with like the things on tripods and they look through them and they have, you know, like ropey, stringy measuring tape things that they roll out. But this was like, hey, we literally don't know what's on the other side of that mountain. Could you please go look and draw it for us? Thank you very much.
Exactly. So he, through his work with him, George Fairfax, he secured an appointment as a county surveyor and created the frontier county of Culpeper.
That's very fun. I like that.
So through all this, he became pretty successful and was able to support his family, and then bought a bunch of unclaimed land. That was kind of like the cool thing about being a surveyor.
You found all the good land.
You would find the good land and you would buy it up. He did actually, get conscripted into the army.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think eventually he did serve if memory is correct.
Yes, he did. And he served bravely in the French and Indian War, but actually suffered numerous defeats. So,
it's referenced in Hamilton, right?
Yeah.
History has its eyes on you. He talks about, I tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and full of glory. You have no control who lives, who dies, who tells your story. Anyways, back to the story. Well, Teresa, you're telling his story right now.
It's happening.
This is our Hamilton, except it's about George Washington.
Yes. I think it's interesting that George Washington's enslaved manservant, named Billy Lee, entered the war at Washington's side and stayed with him throughout the Revolutionary War. So we've skipped up from the French and Indian War up to the Revolutionary War.
It's little and we don't have to delve into it too much, but it's a thing that I think people forget about history a lot. It's like Washington was from Virginia. Washington was a Southern dude.
Yeah.
You know, by the standards of the time, he was a Southerner. I know now Virginia is not seen as the most Southern state, but he had slaves. He and Jefferson both, like a lot of people that we think of as like these very, you know, good, equal rights for man kind of people, they also had slaves.
Right. And Billy Lee was actually widely known as a very courageous man and an expert horseman. Speaking of his slaves, Martha, who he married in 1759, who actually brought her children from a previous marriage into the marriage. When he
Washington
married,
didn't have any kids of his own.
No, he didn't. Yep, just stepchildren. But she brought all of her own slaves, which unfortunately, when he wrote in his will that he wanted to free his slaves, he unfortunately legally could not free the slaves that Martha brought with her, because those were called dower slaves, or their inherited slaves. And it was actually kind of sad for the whole freeing of the slaves thing, because the two groups had kind of intermarried.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bittersweet that some of the families could be half free, you know what I mean? All right. At the time of the Revolutionary War, George wrote home to Martha that he expected that he would return in the fall.
Well, you know what? I think that's a good place for a bit of a cliffhanger. Who knows how the Revolutionary War is going to turn out? But first, a word from some other Max Fun shows. This week in the Jumbotron, we have a message, and we would like to encourage you to visit songsaladpodcast.com or simply search Song Salad in the podcasting app of your choice to subscribe. Now, Teresa, what is Song Salad?
So, hosts Shannon and Scott, they are professionals and best friends. They write an insane new song every week about a random topic from Wikipedia. I think that's awesome. So, past songs include a metal song about the fjords of Greenland and a Portuguese folk song about indigenous sea sponges of Venezuela. This looks like a great opportunity to learn about music and a little about whatever else and, you know, in a funny way.
So laugh along with them as they spin the salad spinner every Monday. Go to Song Salad Podcast. That's SongSalad podcast.com or search Song Salad in a podcasting app of your choice to subscribe. If you would like us to do a message about your podcast or website or business, or if you would like to just wish someone a happy birthday or tell them that you love them or happy Valentine's Day or whatever you'd like to do, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and hear your message on the show.
My name is Patrick.
My name is Ariel.
My name is Joe Coghlan. The first time I went to MaxFunCon, I didn't know anyone. I was really nervous about that.
Everyone said not to worry about going alone, that I'd make friends right away, that I'd have an amazing time. It turns out, everyone was right.
I instantly had 200 new friends.
I've made lifelong friends at MaxFunCon that I'm going to keep in touch with for the rest of my life.
If you aren't sure if you belong at MaxFunCon, you belong.
Don't be like me. Don't waste 2 years being too nervous. Just go already.
Join Ariel, Patrick, and Joe at MaxFunCon. Tickets for MaxFunCon and MaxFunCon East are on sale now at MaxFunCon.com.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert, and we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
Yeah, I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? All right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
All right. So when last we left off, the Revolutionary War had just begun and it was already heading towards an ending, right?
Right. In June 1775, he was commissioned to take command of the Continental Army, and he thought that he would return in the fall, or that's what he wrote to Martha. He did not return to Mount Vernon for 8 years.
Boom!
Ooh.
Whoops! A little bit of a miscalculation on that estimate.
Yes. But While he was head of the Continental Army, a great many wonderful things were said about his command. A Frenchman who met him during this time said of him, "I have never seen anyone who was more naturally and spontaneously polite."
Excellent.
And at the same time, another admirer, French admirer, is quoted as saying, "His manners are those of one perfectly accustomed to society, quite a rare thing in America."
And another man said, "It was weird to me that his skin was made of metal."
You keep referencing that song.
Some of this I'm just making up off the top of my head. I think the metal skin thing is something out of my brain. But wouldn't that be cool if Washington were a robot man? I'm just saying.
I suppose so.
I mean, just picture. Listen, there's a lot of like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and these like, what if you made a movie called George Washington, America's First Robot?
Well, I think that he would have looked a lot differently if he was a robot. But instead, he has said another Frenchman, so many of those lovely Frenchmen helped us out during that Revolutionary War, said of his first impression, "I could not keep my eyes from that imposing countenance. Grave, yet not severe, affable, without familiarity. Its predominant expression was calm dignity." So I don't think he would have looked as calm if he was a robot.
Well, robots don't show a lot of emotion, but we can get into that in our robot manners episode. So here's my question for you, honey. This Revolutionary War you speak of, did he win?
He did.
Oh, good. Whew. I was worried.
To the world's amazement. He prevailed over a more numerous, better supplied, and fully trained British army.
And a lot of that's due to creative guerrilla tactics, if I am to understand the little bit of history that I can remember.
Well, let's say that he was more flexible in his fighting style.
Yeah, listen, I'm sure that he was a really amazing commander, a really great general. I don't know, it's easy for me to say this now, but I don't know how creative a military mind it takes to think, maybe just like all lining up and marching in a solid chunk towards people with guns. Maybe there's a better way than that. We'll see. Let's try it.
Like I said, flexible. Yeah. He was flexible. I really think one of the things that I read was he was really good at trying to see the big picture. He wasn't hung up on like winning little things here and there. It was about very strategic winning. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, just racking up the points.
There were some battles that were more pivotal and more important than others where you didn't want to lose supply lines or ports and that kind of thing. It was more important to win those
exactly.
than some random battle in a field taking place for no reason.
Right. And I mean, we probably don't have many records of the random battles, but there are records of him, I don't want to say losing on purpose, but I want to say not caring so much about specific battles.
Strategic retreats.
Yeah, strategic retreats. All right. In keeping with his noble aesthetic, on December 23rd, 1783, he presented himself before Congress and resigned his commission.
Well, he was a son of Cincinnatus.
Aha, that's exactly it.
Oh, yay, I got one right.
He very much admired that hero of classical antiquity. And so that was one of the things that he's most admired for in his life, is he didn't want to, assume power and become king. So he went home to Mount Vernon and he was like, never again. I'm just going to stay here. Mount Vernon, my plantation home. We all know that didn't happen.
What?
Just a few years later, in 1787, Washington ended his self-imposed retirement and traveled to Philadelphia to convene the Constitutional Convention.
Do you know who else was in the Sons of Cincinnati?
Who?
Alexander Hamilton.
Hey.
Yeah. I have a deep fascination with the Sons of Cincinnati. Although I think the last time we talked about the Sons of Cincinnati, I said that Cincinnatus was Greek, but Cincinnatus was actually Roman. I might have to just do a whole episode on the Sons of Cincinnatus just to educate myself.
Cool. I'm game.
Cool.
So he presided over the Continental Convention because he was really determined to make a government that had real energy and authority. After the Constitution was approved, He was like, let's retire again. But do you know what happens next?
They make him president.
They do. The first presidential election was held and he received a vote from every elector. He remains the only president in American history to be elected by unanimous voice of the people.
Until 2020, vote Travis McElroy. So then, do you have anything there about wooden teeth?
I mean, no.
Here's the couple things I know. One, he probably didn't have wooden teeth. They were probably, I think he had different sets. One was ivory, and one was actually made from human teeth. But one of the things...
Which was like what teeth were made of back then.
Yes. One of the things I do know, though, is if you see like his presidential portrait, he has a very grim look on his face. And that is most likely due to, one, either intense tooth pain, because the dude had rotten jompers, or the way that they made dentures then, they were, like, spring-loaded, and it was, the tension was in keeping them closed, or, sorry, the tension was keeping them open.
Right.
So you had to keep your jaw locked to keep your mouth from being open all the time. So, like, he would have to clench his teeth so that his dentures didn't spring open. So he had kind of a grim look whenever his mouth was closed because he was keeping his dentures closed.
Makes sense. But regarding the presidency, it is said that he always preferred Mr. President, although the official form of address was His Highness, the President of the United States of America and Protector of Their Liberties. That's what was favored by the Senate.
I'll take it. I like that.
You like that one instead of Mr. President?
Oh, he has dentures. He had dentures comprised, are made of ivory, gold, lead, but wood was never used.
Thanks for that, honey.
Well, this show's all about accuracy, darling. When he delivered his first inaugural address in 1789, he had only one single remaining natural tooth.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is said of George Washington's first presidential run that he administered government with fairness and integrity, assuring Americans that the president could exercise extensive executive authority without corruption. Thomas Jefferson said that his integrity was most pure, his justice most inflexible, no motive of interest or continuity, friendship or hatred is able to bias his decision.
So he was
pretty great.
He was a good dude.
He was a good dude. Okay. So we've talked a lot about his presidency. Let's go back to these rules of civility and how they influenced a lot of his professional life.
Okay.
Here is rule number 73. Think before you speak. Pronounce not imperfectly, nor bring out your words too hastily, but orderly and distinctly. So he was considered a thoughtful and careful speaker, and is said of him that in conversation, he looks you full in the face, is deliberate, definitive, and engaging. His voice is agreeable rather than strong, and his demeanor at all times composed and dignified.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty presidential to me. Think before you speak.
Absolutely. And so his public speeches, his inaugural addresses, did they have the State of the Union at that point?
Probably.
Were hailed for his outstanding oratorical skills, but it was simple and sincere. It is said that his first inaugural address brought tears to the eyes of his listeners, confirming the entrancing spell of their leader's inspiring speaking ability.
It was probably written by Alexander Hamilton, too.
You think so?
Probably. He wrote a lot of them speeches for George Washington. The Constitution says that the president shall from time to time give blah, 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 the State of the Union. And George Washington started the tradition of delivering an annual presidential speech to Congress. So, yes, George Washington did start the State of the Union.
Awesome. So we've seen, or we've talked about, how great of a president George Washington was, but he was also a fantastic man and host.
Okay.
Number 93. Entertaining anyone at table, it is decent to present him with meat. Undertake not to help others undesired by the master.
Wait, one more time? It's decent to present someone with meat.
Number 93. Entertaining anyone at table, it is decent to present him with meat. Undertake not to help others undesired by ye master. I think that maybe the second half is something else.
Okay. So, offer of meat, cool. Yep. Listen, I am not a vegan, nor a vegetarian, nor a pescatarian, nor anitarian, and so I'm a big fan of meat, and I get this. I think we could maybe translate that in the modern day to offer them the best you have to offer. Offer them, you know, like, that idea of, like, give them the best thing you got. Don't hold back as far as, like, the good food goes.
Mm-hmm. I have a dinner menu served in 1799 at Mount Vernon. A meal consisting of leg of boiled beef, mutton chops, hominy, cabbage, potatoes, pickles, field tripe, onions, minced pies, tarts, cheese, nuts, apples, and raisins.
That was the appetizers. And then what was the main course?
No, that was the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Great. Gotcha.
Right. Their dinner guests often called them their dinners warm and gracious. So that's a pretty good meal.
I tell you, I know that George Washington was a good president, but it makes me so happy to hear reports of, like, and he was also a nice guy and fun to party with. I like that. That makes me happy.
And yet his table manners were impeccable because, number 97, put not another bite into your mouth until the former be swallowed. Let not your morsels be too big for the jowls.
That's fun. I like that.
Here are a couple very much pertaining to dinner. Number 95. Put not your meat into your mouth with your knife in your hand, neither spit forth the stones of any fruit pie upon a dish, nor cast anything under the table.
Yeah. These are good rules.
One last one. Number 98. Drink not nor talk with your mouth full, neither gaze about you while you are a-drinking.
Okay, mouthful, you got me. That's the thing, you know, don't talk with your mouthful. I like this idea of, like, when you're drinking, not, like, looking around the table. Just look down into your cup. Don't make eye contact with anyone. I like that. Because it is weird. If you're drinking and you make eye contact with someone, it is weird. I'll give them that.
They hosted many dinners at their estate, and they had a lot of guests throughout the years. It was almost like kind of a tavern atmosphere. rule number 109, let your recreations be manful, not sinful. So they offered a lot of recreations to their guests, like strolling through the pleasure garden. Mm-hmm. Or
which is not sinful. That's not a sinful euphemism.
No. Okay. Or bowling on the green.
Or bagos.
And... well, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. How old are bagos? How old is cornhole?
And guests at Washington's home, Mount Vernon, were encouraged to stay as long as they liked.
Forever?
I mean,
was it like Hotel California?
As long as they liked.
Okay. This sounds both welcoming and simultaneously like The Shining. You've always been at Mount Vernon.
One of the other many recreations that they offered at Mount Vernon were balls and dances.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually known as a very energetic and excellent dancer.
Really?
I've seen Hamilton.
I know that.
There are many accounts.
She's got moves.
Of him dancing throughout the night with an array of his female guests.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool.
You know, but also, once again, not that surprising because you think about the time frame. And, like, once again, Southern, you know, lots of balls, lots of dances growing up. you go to cotillions, you go to these things, you're like, you know, training and dancing was a thing that you did. It wasn't like, I like to go out to clubs and dance. It was like a thing that you did for social reasons and to, you know, rise up ranks and stuff.
Exactly.
So it shouldn't be that surprising that George Washington knew how to dance. I do like, though, that him being described as energetic. That makes me smile. Because I just picture, yeah, he was a good dancer. But that dude was, like, all over the place. He was jumping on tables and stuff, but he did it well. He was so good at it, but he could dance all night long. He was a dancing machine.
I mentioned earlier his marriage to Martha, mm-hmm. and it was considered a love match. They wrote...
You mean as opposed to like a marriage of convenience, not
exactly.
Like in the parlance of like The Bachelor. It was a love match.
As opposed to marrying for convenience or money, gotcha. Usually. And they, George and Martha, they wrote constant letters back and forth to each other, although only two of them survive.
Really?
Yes.
The other ones were just too hot to handle. Had to burn them up.
Well, I think that the both of them conscribe to rule number 71. What you may speak in secret to your friend, deliver not before others.
It's very good.
To that letter, Martha burned all but two of these letters. So because I think that she was aware that future generations would want to read them. And to keep them private, she burned them.
You know, on the one hand, I sit there and I think that's a shame because I bet there was a lot we could learn about their lives and about the time and about the history from those letters. But then I also think about in this day and age, what kind of interactions like you and I have where it's like, oh, man, my stomach really hurts. I've been to the bathroom like 8 times today. And I wouldn't want to read that. I wouldn't want to know, like, yeah, the day before the inauguration, George Washington was so sick and just kept rushing back to the bathroom. Like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, I guess that's an interesting factoid, but, so yeah, it's interesting. It's always interesting. It's, I think, one of the reasons that people seem so drawn to stuff like 1776 and, you know, Hamilton and biographies of founding fathers, because we think of these people as these very mythical, larger-than-life characters, but then they also, like, danced.
Exactly. They were real people,
yeah.
And a lot of legend has been built up around them, but the deeper that you delve into what their lives were actually like, you go to realize that they were just men.
Yeah, they were human beings. So thank you for joining us, and thank you to whoever sent the book. Please let us know so we can thank you officially in the next episode. Sometimes, you know, it's there's not names included with everything, and we get a little bit lost on it. But it was a very good read and a very fun episode. Thank you, my darling, for doing all the research and whatnot. We want to say go check out all the other amazing shows on MaximumFun.org. There's a bunch of incredible shows on there. You're going to find one that you love. Also, wanted to let, if you didn't see it, wanted to let you know that we put up My Brother and Me. We got interviewed by UpRocks, and we released a preview, a trailer for the upcoming television show. It's got a bunch of clips, a bunch of bits, a bunch of goofs, and I'm very proud of it, and people seem to really like it. We tweeted that out, but you can also, I imagine, just Google, like, UpRocks, My Brother and Me, CSO preview trailer, and find it.
And this cut of the trailer does have one bad word, right?
But I believe it's bleeped out.
Okay.
Yes. We were very careful, so you should be able to listen to it. Let's see, what else? Oh, if you're in the Cincinnati area, another show that I do, not on Max Fun, but another podcast I do with my friend Tybee, where we talk about all the things in the world and in our lives that are frustrating us, called Interrobang with Travis and Tybee. We are doing a live show here in Cincinnati on February 25th. It's going to be $12. You can get your tickets at the door. It's at the No Underground, the No Theater here in Cincinnati. $12, $1 from every ticket is going to go to support the ACLU. If you would like to buy your tickets in advance and don't want to buy them at the door, you know, tweet at me, let me know, and we'll figure it out. We'll get you on a list and work out like a PayPal deal or something. But we prefer you buy them at the door. It's just easier that way. What else, Teresa? What am I not thinking of?
Thank yous.
Oh, yes. We want to say thank you to Brent Brentelfloss Black, who did our intro and outro music for us, which is available as a ringtone on iTunes through your Apple device, and I think also through maybe Android, but I definitely know ringtones available through iTunes. And thank you to Letitia
Baldridge.
Letitia Baldridge for the book. Oh, you can follow us on Facebook. Just search Schmanners and join the group. You can follow us on Twitter at Schmannerscast, SHMANNERSCAST. Let's see. No, I think that's everything. So join us again next week.
No RSVP required.
You've been listening to Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.